series of Ian Smith is Stressed.
This Cultural Life, where my guests share their most significant cultural influences and experiences.
And I said, what would you like to do? You can either take a secretarial course or you can sing. I said, the easiest option is I'll sing.
In the new series, the opera singer Dame Kirita Kanawa, the crime novelist Lee Child.
We grew up with a respect for books, which was the main value in my upbringing.
And we'll also hear from the Booker Prize winning author Marlon James.
As a child, I read everything. I thought books were keeping secrets from me, and I just wanted to know what they were.
This Cultural Life with me, John Wilson, on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds, starts tomorrow morning at 11.
And at 7:15 tonight, you've got another chance to hear Zadie Smith on This Cultural Life, talking about the inspiration for her writing, including A Trip to West Africa and the C.S. Lewis book, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Now, though, here's Ian Smith.
Hello and welcome to Ian Smith is Stressed, a comedy show all about stress and my misguided attempts at relaxation. So get into a warm bath, turn up the radio, and then spend the next half an hour worrying about dropping that radio into the bath and electrocuting yourself to death. If you're tuning in to get genuine relaxation advice, I've been told by the BBC that I must legally inform you I'm an idiot and know nothing. It's a pretty hurtful exchange with the lawyers, if I'm honest with you. But it's better that than being sued by a Radio 4 listener, a group of people I'm reliably told have a lot of time on their hands. I'm a bit like Gwyneth Paltrow, a self-styled wellness guru, but I'm not a millionaire, and the candle I made that smells like my penis has not sold well. Why am I talking about stress? Well, because I'm stressed all of the time and manage to overthink simple situations. The worst thing that can happen to me is someone asks me to watch their laptop while they go to the toilet in a cafe. I'm scanning the room for enemies like Jason Bourne, spiralling into a panic about fighting off two armed robbers who want to steal one thing and one thing only, the laptop I've been charged with protecting. The only way I've found to avoid this stress is to immediately steal the laptop yourself. This week, I'll be talking about holidays, the ultimate form of relaxation or the ultimate form of stress. I asked the BBC for this episode if they would fund a holiday to the Seychelles, and they gave a very clear no. It's that kind of caution that's meant the BBC hasn't been embroiled in a single scandal in its 100-year history. Besides, their green policy means they will not cover flights, and the BBC hovercraft has already been block-booked by Paul Merton. He'll only let you borrow it if you can explain why you need it for 60 seconds without hesitation, deviation or repetition. If I can get stressed out on a holiday, does that mean there's no escape? We can put an out-of-office reply on our emails, but how can we put an out-of-office reply into our minds? As part of my exploration, I've decided to tackle the most stressful holiday situation head-on, trying to see if I can land a passenger plane with no training. Crucially, in a flight simulator. I met with Alan, an ex-pilot who runs the simulator and would be acting as air traffic control, guiding me down to the ground. I read an article that apparently 50% of men think they could land a passenger plane with no training, a stat that probably tells you all you need to know about men. Alan gave me the actual stats.
In percentage terms, they are actually pretty slim, for a novice. So I would say, being generous, probably about a 10% chance if the circumstances were favourable and the right people were available.
I like those odds. Firstly, Alan taught me through the scenario he'd set up for the simulation.
Okay, so we're going from London Heathrow to Dusseldorf. We're simulating pilot incapacitation, dual pilot incapacitation, shortly after takeoff.
What one bit of advice would you... would you give me for being in this situation that might help?
Generally, don't press any button that you don't know what it does. But you will have to find the button that's going to enable you to talk to air traffic control.
How hard could it be? Just find one button while also not touching any buttons if I don't know what they do, and that's all the buttons because I've never been in a cockpit before. Still, I was ready to give it a go with all the confidence of a man. Oh, it looks horrible. Why are we on our side? I haven't even got in the, Right, hang on. Just sit down. Okay. Is this turning normal? I need to find a button that would let me communicate with someone.
Mac stuff. Oxygen, no. Engines, no. It's not good. Why are we moving? Nothing to do with flaps, navigation, display.
There was 100 buttons in front of me and I couldn't find the right one. And then this Jobsworth robot voice started criticising my performance.
Airspeed, low. Airspeed, low. Airspeed, low.
Oh, this doesn't feel good. Oh, no.
Airspeed, low. Airspeed, low.
Oh, okay.
Airspeed, low.
Well, I am going to have to accept that we're dying. It feels horrible that we're dying. Oh, no.
In less than 10 minutes, the plane had crashed. In my defence, the plane did technically land, just too quickly and at an insane angle. I hadn't even made it past step one, which was to press a button to talk to someone who knew what they were doing. I felt more stressed than ever. My first few holidays, I was completely underprepared. I remember the first time I stayed in a hotel with a minibar, I didn't know what was happening. I went in, opened this fridge and thought, oh, the person before me has left a packet of crisps, one bottle of still water, one bottle of sparkling, a Kit Kat, one bottle of beer, full fat Coke, Diet Coke and a little mixer of whiskey. What a diverse range of stuff to forget. When I was checking out the hotel, they said, have you had anything from the minibar? And I said, no, I've had some stuff out of the fridge. Then I had to pay an amount of money that I would say did not correspond to the things I'd had. I think what I did is I paid for the fridge. I worry so much, I find travelling quite a stressful experience. For example, the amount of times when I'm going to the airport that I check my passport is in my pocket is insane. Every 2 minutes. But not only do I check the passport is there, I open it up, I go on the picture page to check that it is still me. Stressful stuff seems to happen to me on holiday. I was in Scotland with my ex and we were looking for a knitting shop. She was 75 years old, she loved her knitting. But the place Google Maps took us to, it didn't look like a shop. It was just a house on a terrace street with a little sign outside. I didn't like that. Because I think if you don't like stuff in a shop, you just leave the shop. If you don't like stuff in someone's house, you've got to look them in the eye and say, thanks for the cup of tea. The stuff you've made is total crap. Now see me out of your house. I thought it would be weird, she thought it would be completely normal, and I'll let you guys judge for yourselves which one of us was right. So, they answer the door. The first thing they do is make us take off our shoes so we can't escape as quickly as we'd like. They let you keep your shoes on in Argos. We get up the stairs, the room divides into two. One side, there's a table piled with knitting equipment, as expected. My focus is on the other side of the room, where there's something much weirder. There's a cat climbing frame with an animal on it. We've all got an idea in our heads which animal it might be. It's not that one. Pigeon! And it's not a normal pigeon. Like, usually pigeons' heads are going back and forth. This one, his head is spinning around in circles. It only stops doing that to eat out of the tub of mushy peas sitting in front of it. Just going to do a quick recap, because there's a lot to take in there. There's an exorcist pigeon on a cat climbing frame eating mushy peas. Another quick recap, my ex, she hasn't noticed it. The woman whose house it is has not thought that's worth bringing up. Eventually, they gave us the story of the pigeon. I say eventually, I said, is that a pigeon? And I sort of led the conversation. They said, do you see the tree outside? Well, one day there was a mother pigeon and her two pigeon kids. And the mother pigeon goes out for a bit. Goes out. It's a pigeon, it's always out. Anyway, it's gone out. And a strong wind blows the two pigeon kids off the ground. One of them is uninjured and gets back onto the tree, but another one didn't. And they're saying another one at this point, like it isn't obvious which pigeon they're talking about. Old windy neck liquid food in the corner. And what we do now, whenever we see the mother pigeon back on the branch, we pick up our pigeon and we wave it at the mother pigeon. So she knows her son is being looked after properly. The first holiday abroad, I went to a place in Norway called Tromsø. And there's not a lot to do in Tromsø, best illustrated by a TripAdvisor article called The Top 10 Things to Do in Tromsø, and number 8 was, why not revisit number 1? Just call it the top 7 things to do. Because now number 9 is, did you enjoy too? Get back there. I went husky sledding, and when we arrived at the sledding centre, the woman who run the place come on board. The first thing she said, hello, husky sledding is not cruel to the dogs. I don't think any of us thought it was cruel. Now we do. That's way too suspicious. I don't think you'd enjoy listening to this show if I opened with, my name's Ian Smith, and if you left your kids with me, they'd be fine. Anyway, there was a man in the group who was clearly concerned about this because he put his hand up and asked a question as if he was an 8-year-old boy. He just went, are any of the dogs sad? And he followed that up with, they're making sad noises. Without hesitation, to a 40-year-old man, she went, sad? No, they're singing a happy song because you've come. And that man looked back at her and just went, oh, good. All his concerns have been answered there. The main reason I went was to see the Northern Lights, or as I call them, the Lights. If you don't know the science of the Northern Lights, I'll explain it to you. So the sun emits, like, bits of itself come off the sun, and then there's a bit around the Earth that's like magnets and all sorts of stuff, and they're green. I was worried about seeing the Northern Lights because throughout the booking process, they say to you repeatedly, you might not see the Northern Lights. Now, OK, well, guess what? I might not pay. But they say, don't worry, if we don't see the Northern Lights, we'll still have a really fun time learning about the history of the Northern Lights. Like, oh, yeah, that sounds terrible. You can't do that in any other situation. Like being Greg's, and they say, well, you might not get a sausage roll, but don't worry, you'll still have a fun time in Greg's learning about the history of the pork industry. But I did get to see the Northern Lights. Incredible! Wow! Best things I've ever seen. And we're sat around a fire staring up at the lights, incredibly relaxing, until the tour guide said, interesting fact that you might not have realised, we're currently sat on top of a frozen lake. Right. Is that interesting, is it? We're on a frozen lake. We're around a fire. Fire is the enemy of frozen lakes. I think I'm allowed to say this on Radio 4. Norwegians are thick. Now, maybe we don't need to go on holiday physically. We just need to give ourselves some time away from work and stress mentally. There's lots of meditation apps now that have soothing soundscapes and stories. There's one on Headspace called Nighttime Laundrette. Now, that's okay for me, but that's got to be stressful if you work in a laundrette anyway. Everyone else is listening to the soothing sounds of the machines turning around. You're lying there thinking, sounds like one of them's been overloaded. But some relaxing experiences are meant to be universal, like the beach. Who doesn't love the beach? I'll tell you who. Me. These beach soundscapes are always made to sound so idyllic, but that's not the experience of a beach for me. So I've written my own meditational tape to reflect how I feel about beaches. Now, I don't have the relaxing tones needed to record this myself, at least according to my voiceover agent, who refuses to put me forward for M&S Simply Food ads. She says I've got more of a Greg's vibe. And that's fair enough, I do know a lot about the pork industry. So, I've got a special guest to do it for me. Please welcome professional actor and meditation tape enthusiast, Ed MacArthur! And Ed, thank you very much for helping me out. When did you realise you had a voice that would be good for meditation tapes?
As a boy, I was often told by school friends that my voice had a calming quality.
Sorry, yeah, that's absolutely sent me off. Yeah, that's fantastic. OK, well, let's take the audience into the soothing beachscape.
Imagine yourself on a beach. Probably not in the UK, as we currently have some of the most polluted coastlines in the EU, due to water companies spilling sewage into the rivers. Picture yourself on a beach somewhere hot, likely hotter than it was in your parents' day due to ongoing global heating, which you've contributed to by flying here, but never mind that now. You walk along the soft, white sand, and even though you haven't sat down yet, you already seem to have sand inside your arsehole. You go over to the deck chairs and are informed that they cost £25. You sit between an overly amorous couple and a man trying to do a Zoom call to a work colleague. After telling someone 14 times that you do not need to buy some sunglasses and that you quite clearly already have a pair on your head, you lather your pale body with sun lotion. Unbeknownst to you, you have missed a section of your back that will ache for the rest of the trip. Wind blows sand on your sticky body, making it look like you've pebble-dashed yourself. This reminds you that your neighbours back home have tarmacked over their front garden, which will cause drainage problems on the street in the years to come. You decide to go for a swim. The warm water welcomes you in like a comforting hug. You float effortlessly on the surface, the sun smiling down on your face, until you put your hand through a jellyfish and stinging pain passes through your entire body. Your hand on fire like you've just bought a McDonald's apple pie. Placed it in your palm and clenched your fist. You splash your way onto the shoreline, past a couple fornicating in the chest-height water. Next to them, a man has pulled his shorts down and is defecating into the ocean. Better out than in, he says. It all ends up in the same place. You fall onto the shore. An onlooker starts to urinate on your hand. You explain the jellyfish stung your other hand, and he replies... what jellyfish?
Yeah, thank you very much, Ed. How did you find that?
Thoroughly enjoyable. It's just great to be out of the house at the moment. It's been a very difficult time for my family and I.
Sorry that got me going again. Just lovely dulcet tones. Well, thank you very much for joining you. Ed McArthur, everyone! But even enjoying a holiday can be stressful. You can enjoy it too much. There's this thing called Stendhal syndrome, which happens on holidays, and it's a psychosomatic disorder with symptoms including fainting, dizziness, and rapid heart rate caused when someone is exposed to particularly beautiful art or large amounts of art. Probably some people listening at home starting to feel those symptoms themselves right now. I'd like to tell you about the most stressful holiday I've been on and the most relaxing holiday I've been on. The most stressful, me and my brother went to Chernobyl. My brother is 35 years old, he'd never been abroad before. So where do you want to go? He said, Chernobyl. I think as a joke, I booked it. Now, when you go into Chernobyl, you have to go on a radiation machine to test how much radiation is on your body. Going out, I would understand. Going in, who's not been allowed into Chernobyl? Who's gone through a machine and been told, you can't come in here, mate, you're going to make things worse? On the machine, a green light means no radiation and you can leave. An amber light means some radiation, and worryingly, you're also just allowed to leave. Just allowed to leave, and you just think about that for the rest of your life. Red means you're contaminated with radiation, of which the tour guide said, red is bad news. This happened once before, not good. Then he looked sad for about 20 seconds, and then we started our tour. He was a fun tour guide, though. At one point, we were stood quite far away from him because we're worried about his levels of radiation. And he said, come closer, I do not bite. But if I did, you would become superhero. That was always going to be a stressful holiday. But if you're looking for a relaxing getaway, there's no better time. Holidays now are becoming increasingly marketed by wellness and relaxation. According to Lonely Planet, wellness tourism is the fastest growing sector in travel, worth over $500 billion. That's exactly what I was looking for last year, a de-stressing holiday. So I've been Googling things like ultimate relaxation, and that led me to a website called enjoybratislava.com. It had an event called Car Demolition Tank Driving Experience. You get sledgehammers, you smash up the car for half an hour, then you get in a tank and you drive that tank over the car. As soon as I saw that, I was like, get me a one-way ticket to Slovakia now. Followed by another one-way ticket in 2 days' time, going back the other way. a return. But there was a problem. The website said this event has a six-person minimum. Turned out this was a website exclusively for stag do's, work events, and I imagine polyamorous honeymoons. My suspicion that it was for stag do's was aroused when I saw one of the additional extras you could select was for €7 per person, you could get a stripper on your minibus. That's not a usual element of a relaxation experience. So I bought six tickets, assuming I'd be able to find five people up for coming with me. I found one. My hairdresser, Dom. Now, Dom is my mate. It's crucial you know that, because at the minute it sounds like he's been cutting my hair and said, going anywhere on your holidays? We've been mates a long time, but we met through him cutting my hair, and I used to introduce him to people by saying, this is Dom, my hairdresser. Thought that was a fun thing to do. I stopped because four or five times people made the same joke where they would look at Dom and say, I wouldn't want to admit to being his hairdresser. And then Dom would laugh, and then Dom would point at my face and say something like, yeah, but you can only work with the tools you've got. And then they would laugh, and it's just two people bonding over how terrible my haircut is. 3 weeks later, we're in Slovakia, and the woman who met us seemed genuinely curious to see who we were. She said, this isn't a stag do, is it? Like, the two of us? No, that would be a pretty sad stag do. Are you celebrating anything? Nope. Do you work together? Yes. Yeah, Dom works for me every 2 months for an hour. It's your classic hairdresser client outing. She looks at Dom. I wouldn't want to admit to being his hairdresser. She puts us on a minibus. 12 seats, two people. We're taking up one seat for the bus. There's a sign on the top of the bus saying your seatbelt must be worn at all times. As soon as I saw that, I thought, how is the stripper operating in this environment? Best case scenario, she's stripping with a seatbelt on while one member of the stag do describes what she's doing to three rows of three behind him. But we get there. It's an incredible experience. They give you knives to stab the tyres with. I don't know if you've ever stabbed a car tyre with a knife. Give it a go on the way home. It's incredible. Dom's lost his mind, he's put the weapons down, he's ripping a wing mirror off with his hands, he's taking too much off the sides, as per. Smashing up the back of the car, holding up a mirror so I can see what he's done. Yeah, bit more off, bit more off. Then we get in the tank. And it feels like it's happening in slow motion. We're crushing this car, 45 degree angle, and I think I have two consecutive thoughts. My first thought, I'm in Slovakia with my hairdresser and I'm crushing a car with a tank. And this is the most relaxed I've felt in 5 years. Immediate second thought, this cannot be how I deal with stress. Back at the flight simulator, Alan graciously let me try again. In this new scenario, one of the cabin crew had shown me the button, but they themselves were too cowardly to attempt a landing. Ian becomes a hero, take two.
Hello.
Identify yourself.
Oh,
aircraft calling.
My name's Ian Smith. The pilots are dead and I'm gonna have to try and land the plane myself.
Could you say that again?
The pilots are dead, I'm gonna have to land the plane myself.
Okay, well, I need you to just stay calm for a moment.
Okay.
Okay, do you know what your flight number is?
No, I don't know the flight number. We're going to Dusseldorf. And there's a choir on board, if that helps.
I should explain. I am dedicated to realism, so I demanded we had screaming passengers in the background. Unfortunately, Radio 4 told us very firmly not to broadcast a minute of screaming on the radio at dinner time. But luckily, there was a compromise. We hired a surprisingly affordable local choir to play the terrified passengers. However, the original song they insisted on composing was making me more stressed than anything.
But something is wrong, and now it's you in charge, and everybody is freaking out. Now it's up to you.
Alan, what should I do with heading?
400 people will die, die, die. But something is wrong.
Yes?
We need a heading of 169.
Yeah, the song isn't helping me.
When I couldn't take any more, I turned off the oxygen flow to the cabin to calm the passengers. Then Alan and I were faced with the final stretch.
What can you see now, Ian?
Runway. We're down to nearly 500.
Okay.
Might as well get in your brace positions, I'd say. Should I be doing anything or having anything ready? Still got a bit to go. Are we alive yet?
Well done.
Yeah. Piece of piss, everyone's alive!
I'd done it. I'd successfully landed an airplane. Almost first time. And my confidence was, unlike the plane, sky high. Never doubt a man giving something a go. One thing I hadn't realised about modern passenger planes is that they can also be landed by autopilot, provided you press the right buttons, you don't even need to touch the wheel. But considering how easy it had been on autopilot, I insisted on being let loose on the manual controls and raw dogged that plane to the ground. Here's how that attempt went.
I feel like the runway is looking like it's getting a bit short, if I'm honest with you.
Okay, stop pulling back, Ian.
Yeah. Does it matter that we're not on the exact runway, but it looks like we're more on the grass?
It does matter a bit.
No, I reckon we got this landed, though. Oh, I'm sorry. We've gone into the airport there, I think.
Sure, it had been a bumpier landing than on autopilot, but I reckon I still did okay. Alan chose to focus on the negatives.
Yeah, that would have been a total aircraft loss and probably everybody on board.
Oh,
yeah,
probably.
And the airport, plus it's part of the terminal, the aerial hotel and part of a motorway as well, by the looks of it.
So, we've come to the end of the series. And have I figured out how to de-stress? Yes. Get up at 6 a.m, go to a farm and hug a cow. Then take your clothes off and have someone draw all over you. Wash it all off in a nice bath filled with 25 bags of ice before taking yourself on holiday, safe in the knowledge that if anything goes wrong on the plane, you can land it. As long as you know where the communication switch is, nothing goes wrong with the autopilot, there's absolutely no wind and you've managed to adjust the seat so you can actually reach the brakes. It couldn't be more simple. Thank you very much for listening.
You've been listening to Ian Smith is Stressed, written and performed by Ian Smith, with additional material from Rhiannon Shaw and Max Davis. Featuring Ed MacArthur, the producers were Benjamin Sutton and Laura Shaw. It was a Daddy Super Yacht production for BBC Radio 4.
If you're looking for laughs,
this is where the magic happens.
BBC iPlayer's got you covered.
Good. Life is interesting at last.
With over 3,000 episodes of comedy favourites.
They make for great entertainers.
I need a shortlist.
Including The Office, Two Doors Down, The Thick of It, and many more.
Oh, what is that?
Whoa. Put my stapler inside a jelly again.
Bring on the laughs.
What are you laughing at?
Watch on BBC iPlayer.
This is Radio 4. In the Archers next this evening, George fears he may be out of his depth. And then at 7:15, John Wilson.